Welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm Dr. Jay Butler, your host for today's program. Unless you have a really good spam filter, our inboxes are filled daily with subject lines like drop 17 pounds in a month with Keto Plus or food for heart attack defense. There are literally thousands of books published on what to eat in order to lose weight, prevent cancer, or to maximize athletic or academic performance. One health food chain outside touted nearly $16 billion in revenue last year. Just a little context, that's about three border walls. How do we distinguish the healthy from the hype? Joining me in the studio today is registered dietitian nutritionist Kaylee Hill to discuss what are the important components of a healthful and enjoyable diet. Kaylee is the Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC, dietitian at the Anchorage Department of Health and Social Services. Kaylee, welcome to Line One, your health connection.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and have the opportunity to represent registered dietitians in our community.
Well, we'll be discussing eating for health and enjoyment. So what questions do you have? Take a look at your inbox and see what's the latest pitch. So give us a call and join in the conversation. We welcome you to call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also drop us an email at line1, that's line1 at alaskapublic.org. Or if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8433. So before we get into the discussion of eating for health and enjoyment, we've started many of the recent programs talking about careers in healthcare. So Kaylee, you're a registered dietitian nutritionist, also known as an RD. How does one become an RD?
Yeah, so there are a few steps to becoming a registered dietitian. The first is that you need to complete an ACEND dietetic program, so an undergraduate degree in nutrition and dietetics. And then once you complete that, you move on to complete another accredited dietetic internship. So the internship is a really hot topic right now in the dietetics world. There are many different internships that you can go into, but the main thing is that it's pretty hard to get into them. There's about a 50% acceptance rate to getting into the internship, and it is something that you need to complete to become a registered dietitian. Within the internship, you have different rotations. So you go into a clinical setting, you go into a food service setting, and then you also have a community setting. So you get experience in all the different areas of dietetics. And then once you complete this internship, you are then able to take the board exam. And so this exam can be on anything that you have ever learned in your undergraduate degree and in the internship. So once you pass that exam, you are then able to be a registered dietitian. You can put the RD at the end of your name at that point. And then you have to gain licensure in the state that you want to practice in. And then every 5 years, you have to keep up with continuing education.
So. Okay. So does the internship come after you receive your bachelor's degree?
Yes.
And how long is it?
The internship is about a year long. It depends on the program that you get into and the focus of the program, but it should be about a year.
So for most people, the path, say, from high school graduation to becoming an RD is going to be roughly 5 years, 4 years of undergraduate work, followed by a year of internship. And of course, for some people, their senior year was the best 3 years of their life. But it could be done in 5 years, correct?
Yes, theoretically, it could be done in 5 years. It depends on if you get into your internship right away. Some people don't get in and they keep applying year after year. So it really depends on your path. Some people don't want to go right into the internship. They want to get more experience before they apply. So it really depends on who you are and what you want to do.
Okay. And I understand there is a registered dietitian program at University of Alaska at Anchorage. So it's a training that could be obtained right here in Alaska. So what does an RD do?
Yeah, so there are RDs everywhere, and we actually kind of don't always know that. An RD provides nutrition advice. You can find RDs in hospitals, in the school setting, in public health programs like the one that I work in, the WIC program. In nursing homes, fitness centers, within food businesses, there are registered dietitians that work for companies like Siggy's Yogurt and Kind Bars. You can find them in universities, in research settings. Some dietitians decide to open their own private practices. And then also you find registered dietitians in social media a lot, in journalism.
Okay. Yeah. So let's, we have a feel now for the variety of things that a registered dietitian can do. So let's tap into your expertise and start talking about eating for health and enjoyment. So let's start at a very high level. From your perspective, what are the characteristics of a healthy diet?
Sure. So this is really different for everyone, but what I would advise people to be a healthy diet is to focus on eating high quality foods and making sure that you are following your feeding cues. So not eating when you're not hungry and making sure that you do eat when you are hungry, not restricting yourself too much. So when I say high quality foods, what I mean is foods that are nutrient dense. So that's stuff like fruits and vegetables, your lean meats, healthy fats, your poly and monounsaturated fats. And then, of course, not limiting whole grains. But what we do want to limit is processed foods, saturated fats, added sugars, and things that contain a lot of sodium. Not to say that you can't ever have those foods, because they are good, and every once in a while it's fine, but you just want to make sure that you're paying attention to what you're eating. But really, a diet has to make sense for you, has to make sense for your lifestyle, your culture, your level of activity, and it should really respect your personal taste. You don't have to eat food that you don't like. That's kind of a big misconception. But ultimately, it needs to be sustainable for you.
Okay. So I once again have my bag of chips here with a little bit of sound effects, and it's labeled heart healthy. Is this high quality food?
So he's holding up a bag of Sun Chips. It's 100%, it says 100% whole grain. So it's still a chip, and I don't know what it says on the back of it, but thank you.
Maybe the lesson here is read those nutritional labels.
Yes, read the nutritional labels, read the ingredient list. I mean, as a chip is a chip, it's going to have some saturated fat in it. This is a pretty small portion, but I think if you have that every once in a while, it's okay.
All
just
right.
Just don't eat it every day for lunch.
All right. I don't, but and I won't. So thank you for that advice. So some diets are better for certain people than others. It seems like a lot of the focus of eating right now in the United States and really throughout North America is the goal of weight loss. Some diets are for controlling diabetes, some for heart disease. During the last program I hosted, we talked about the DASH diet as a way to control high blood pressure. Just very broadly, are there some diets that are better for certain people than others?
So it does, of course, depend on your condition, your individual medical condition, your food intolerances, your food allergies, your personal beliefs. And if you're someone with a serious medical condition, I do recommend consulting your primary doctor or your registered dietitian before deciding to follow any diets. I can't say that there's any diets that are more healthful for you than others. It really depends on your situation.
Okay. Well, I want to get into some specific diets that are in the news right now, as well as some specific types of food. But we have an email question that's come in from Michelle. There's been a question floating around about dairy. Some say it's evil. Others say it's a good addition. You mentioned Siggy's has a registered dietitian in their ranks. What's the truth?
So I think for a lot of people, dairy is a preference. Dairy is found in cheeses, it's found in yogurt, and of course in milk. So it contains a lot of vitamin D. There are a lot of really healthy vitamins and minerals in milk. So it can be part of a healthy diet if you want it to be. I'm not saying that you have to drink a glass of milk every day for breakfast, but...
Well, I was hoping you were going to say eat a bowl of ice cream every day.
Or a bowl of ice cream every day.
But you didn't. Okay.
But it can be part of a healthy diet. I don't think there's, you know, it's not the worst food in the world. It's not the best food in the world. It's just something that can be part of your diet.
Okay. Now, when we talk about dairy products, of course, there's a whole range then of
yes.
the macronutrients. You talked about some of the micronutrients, such as vitamins and minerals. And I brought up ice cream as an example of one that is going to be, in general, higher in fat and oftentimes have added sugar. So maybe let's talk a bit about the components of our diet that are carbohydrate, protein, or fats.
Okay. So yes.
I don't think there's a fourth option. So we eat anything, we're getting at least one of those three.
Yes, and sometimes multiple. So yes, you have your fats, your protein, and your carbohydrates, and your body does need all three of those. So you do want to get a variety. Each plays a different role in the body, so each is equally important. And so you do want to kind of make sure that you're getting all three.
Okay. So just a reminder, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media, and we're discussing eating for health and enjoyment. And we welcome you to join the conversation by calling us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. And you can also contact us by email at lineone@alaskapublic.org. And my guest today is Kaylee Hill, registered dietitian. So let's get into some specific diets then, because this is what shows up in our email boxes. It seems like the Mediterranean diet is one that certainly shows up in the medical literature quite a bit, and I see it in the general media as well. So let's talk about the Mediterranean diet. Let's start with what is it?
Right. So the Mediterranean diet is one, you're right, that is prescribed pretty often by doctors. It's considered to be heart healthy. It's primarily a plant-based eating plan that includes daily intakes of whole grains, olive oils, fruits, vegetables, beans, legumes, nuts, herbs, spices. So there is a pretty wide variety within it. There are no specific serving sizes that it really focuses on. It does say that you want to include animal proteins, but make sure that they're more like seafood and fish so that they are full of the healthy fats like the omega-3s and the omega-6s. The diet it's pretty open to what you want. It does discourage processed foods, which is a big thing and a big proponent of it that makes it so healthy. And it is really high in the healthy fats.
Okay. And that's an important point, it sounds like. I mean, we talked about carbohydrates, fats, and sugars, and it sounds like, I guess sugars are carbohydrates. Let me try that again. Carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. And when we're talking about fats or carbohydrates, they're not all equal. There's fats that are probably more helpful than others, and then there are also carbohydrates that might be more healthful than others. Am I barking up the right tree there?
You are, yes. Yes, there are the unhealthy fats, which we consider to be the saturated fats and the trans fats that you want to limit, and the healthy, which are the polyunsaturated and the monounsaturated fats. And then, of course, you have your complex carbohydrates and your simple carbohydrates, the simple being the unrefined flours and the sugars that are digested very quickly in your body. And the complex being coming from fruits and vegetables and whole grains that are digested slowly in your body and give you longer bursts of energy.
Okay. So we have a question. This is from Carrie. My kids attend a public school, and they always tell me they don't have enough time to eat their lunch at school. So it's not only an issue of what we eat, but also how we eat, I suppose. I'm concerned that we're teaching kids to scarf their food fast and wonder what the long-term effects of that are if kids eat fast and, they go to public school for 12 years. They also, Michelle goes on to say that the lunchroom monitors yell at kids to be quiet and eat faster. This sounds a little bit like the old prison scenes in movies, which is also concerning due to the possible connection between stress and eating, which, of course, eating sometimes for many people does release dopamine and I suppose could then lead to some addictive behaviors as well. So let's talk a bit about, let's start with that issue of eating fast or versus eating slow.
Yes. So we do want to eat slowly so that you're giving your body time to realize that it is full and that, you know, you're getting everything that you need to get and then realize when you are ready to be done. And if you eat quickly, your body is less likely to have those cues and you're just going to eat everything that's in front of you. And I completely agree that in the school setting, they do have to eat too quickly and the environment in the cafeteria is not the best. And I know that a lot of kids will opt to not eat at all because it's their time to socialize and they'd rather talk with their friends than even eat. So I think that you're onto something when you're asking that question.
Okay. So let's actually touch on we're not really focused on eating disorders today, but this concept of eating as a response to stress. I think Carrie really raises an important issue there that we can at least touch on. That's probably fairly common, and if someone tends to deal with stress by eating, do you have any particular recommendations?
That's a tricky one, and that kind of goes into the psychology of eating, and it brings up the topic of that eating is more than just, you know, what's healthy, what's not healthy. It is a whole psychological thing, and It does take more than just a dietitian, especially with people with eating disorders, to address those issues. I know I eat when I'm stressed, too. I think a lot of people do. Some people don't eat when they're stressed. It can go either way. So eating is more than just what's in front of you, what the food is. It's more of the environment that you're in, how you feel. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into nutrition.
Okay. So, boy, the Mediterranean diet, your description started making me hungry. So enjoyment is also part of the reason why we eat, and we're wired that way to stay healthy. Certainly, some diets are recommended specifically for health conditions. We touched on the DASH diet, which stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. Tell us a little more about that. Is it just low salt, or is it more to it than that?
There's more to it. It also limits saturated and trans fats and also focuses, just similar to the Mediterranean diet, it focuses on plant-based foods and staying away from the processed foods. And it also encourages higher intake of potassium, magnesium, calcium, protein, and fiber, which are all nutrients that are believed to help control blood pressure, which is kind of the idea behind the diet. And it also, unlike the Mediterranean diet, it has more specific serving sizes. And you can actually pick a diet based on the amount of sodium that you want in your diet. And there's lots of meal plans out there for this one. Doctors prescribe this quite a bit, so there's a lot of information out there on it.
Yeah. And a number of randomized studies that have supported the concept of both the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet.
Yes.
And I believe our website includes a link to some additional data on the DASH diet. So let's talk a little more about fats. A couple times we've talked about levels of saturation. What does that mean? Do the fats get wet? What do we mean by polyunsaturated, monosaturated, saturated fats?
So on the level of actual fat molecules, so the fatty acids, that's really where the saturated or unsaturated aspect is coming. Saturated fats are just long chains. They stick together. And so things like your butter and oils that are solid at room temperature, those ones are going to be your saturated fats. And since they are these thin chains, they stick together and they become solid at normal temperatures. Your unsaturated and your polyunsaturated fats, they have kinks in them, in their molecules, and so they are more resistant and they stay liquid form at room temperature.
Okay. We need to take a break for the stations down the line. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. We'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm Dr. Jay Butler, your host for today. We're talking about healthy eating, eating for health and enjoyment. My guest is registered dietitian Kaylee Hill. So what questions do you have about your diet? Are there things that you wonder, should you eat or should you avoid? Give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or drop us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. Kaylee, we were talking about fats in the diet, and you gave us a nice feel for what a saturated fat is, or a unsaturated fat, or a monounsaturated fat. And it sounds like in general, a fat or an oil that is liquid at room temperature in general is going to be less saturated. And are these generally more healthful than the saturated fats?
So it really depends on the oil that we're talking about. I'm sure you've probably heard that the olive oils, the vegetable oils are the best for you. Those are the ones that contain the omega-3 and the omega-6s that are very good for us and that are good for our heart and our brain. So you really want to look into the oil. Don't just assume because it's liquid, it's the best for you.
Okay. Now, one in particular that I'm confused on is the coconut oil, or sometimes called tropical oils. I remember a few years ago, there was a lot of concern that they were very atherogenic, in other words, causing atherosclerosis, increasing the risk of heart disease and vascular complications. I've heard more recently people tout the health benefits of coconut oil. What do we really know about coconut oil?
So coconut oil is a saturated fat. Unlike butter, it does have more nutrients in it. So you're getting a little bit more from it when you eat it. But keep in mind, it's still a saturated fat. It's not the answer to everything. It's still a saturated fat.
So probably the advice of in moderation might be the best.
Just like butter, in moderation.
Okay, yeah. So the cast of Gilligan's Island did not die on the show, so it can't be deadly. So we were talking about the DASH diet. We've talked about the Mediterranean diet. There's also the MIND diet, which I think is kind of a hybrid of those two. And it's thought to help protect against the neurodegenerative effects of aging. Is there more to say than just it's a little bit of Mediterranean and a little bit of DASH?
So this diet is still being studied, so keep that in mind. It's being studied for its effects on minimizing cognitive decline and reducing the risk of Alzheimer's. Still a lot to be studied on it, so could be useful for brain health, but I'm not going to say for a fact it is. It is a hybrid of the two diets, very much plant-based and limited consumption of animal products and things that are high in saturated fat. And it does have a focus on the polyunsaturated fats. But I think other than that, it's not all too different from the DASH diet and the Mediterranean diet. It does have very specific portion sizes, and I believe it's like very specific. You're supposed to eat so many of different foods per week and per day. Okay. And then you're supposed to restrict sweets and saturated fats to about, I think, five a week.
Okay, great. Now, we're focusing on what we eat today and not going to really get into details on nutritional supplements, but we do have an email question. Sheila wants to know, what's the hype about collagen? And I'm more familiar with that in terms of nutritional supplements rather than a part of the diet. Any thoughts on that? When I think of collagen, I'm thinking generally of parts of the meat that I avoid eating. Any thoughts on collagen in the diet?
I don't know a ton about collagen. I know that it has healing properties. But other than that, I think you might be better versed in that than I am.
Fair enough. So we've talked quite a bit about the sort of Mediterranean diet family. Some of these are healthful. Some of them are therapeutic. Let's move into a different world now, the ketogenic diet. Of course, ketones are energy sources that are generated from stored fat. Tell us about the keto diet.
Right. So for those of you who have never heard of the keto diet,
if you just woke up after a 20-year nap.
It is a low-carb, high-fat diet, and the focus is in reducing the carb intake so that your body is kind of changing the way it processes energy, and it's moving away from glucose as energy and moving to, like you said, ketones as energy. So that's the breakdown of fat. So the idea is that your body is breaking down fat and helping you lose weight. And so you're very much restricting carbohydrates. I think it's like 5 to 10% of your diet every day is carbohydrates, which equates to about a medium-sized banana a day.
Wow.
That's not a lot.
It certainly isn't.
No.
But doesn't the brain need glucose to function? Can the brain function on ketones?
Right. So the brain does need glucose to function. That's its preferred source of energy. It can use ketones. Okay. It does convert, like during fasting, when you aren't getting anything, your body breaks down your fat and uses that for your brain, uses the ketones for your brain. Not all cells can use ketones. I think that's a misconception with the diet that you'd be fine with just ketones, but not all of your cells can use them as energy. A lot of cells do need glucose.
Yeah, I think for many of us from a medical background, we struggle with the concept, and we probably have a little bit of bias because we're used to diabetic ketoacidosis, measuring ketones as a indicate in the urine as an indication of a disease state rather than something that's in any way desirable. And of course, we're talking about something that's in ketosis, we've gone way down the line towards a disease state rather than being on the either the edge of starvation, because we also begin to make ketones when we fast for prolonged periods, or our diet is high in fats and we may have more ketones in our bloodstream as well. And you know, this concept of the high-fat diet is not new. We were talking before we went on the air about the Atkins diet a few years back was all the rage. That was also a high-fat diet. How is the Atkins different from the keto diet?
From my understanding, it's not too different. I believe Atkins diet did not restrict carbohydrates quite as strictly, but it was still... It focused primarily on getting most of your nutrients from fat.
Okay. So in another issue I think that we should discuss when we talk about higher fat diets is satiety, that is our satisfaction after we eat. Does fat help encourage satiety? In other words, eating the same amount of food, if there's more fat, we may say, wow, I'm full, I want to stop, or is that an old wives' tale?
That is true. You do get more calories from fat, so they do fill you up a little bit more. We always recommend if you're eating a salad, eat it with dressing. Don't skip out on that, because if you're eating a plain salad, you're going to be hungry soon after. And that salad dressing, the fat in the salad dressing helps you stay full longer. So there is truth in that, yes.
Okay. So a question by email, which I think fits into this discussion of what a healthful meal may look like, and salad dressing is not a beverage, is what is the impact of what we drink on what we eat?
Yes. So that is a big one, especially when I'm working with kids in my practice. They drink a lot of juice, a lot of soda, energy drinks, and their parents are drinking these Starbucks drinks that are very high in calories. And I think sometimes people overlook what they're drinking and they don't realize that that is a very significant source of calories. And it's they're empty calories. There's nothing to it. It's usually just sugar and fat, nothing that's really very good for you. And I know that I was looking at the nutrition facts for a pumpkin spice latte the other day. And it was, I think, up to 400 calories just for one drink. And it was full of calories that you did not need.
And probably a lot of carbohydrate in there as well.
Yes, a lot of sugar.
All right. So let's actually talk a little more about beverages then, because it sounds like that's a source of what we call empty calories, calories that do not have the nutritional substance to really be part of a healthful diet. What are some of the other sources of empty calories, particularly in terms of beverages?
So it feels like you're leading me towards alcoholic beverages.
Well, I would never lead you towards an alcoholic beverage, young lady, but let's discuss that topic.
Yes, alcoholic beverages, especially things like beers, those are very high in calories. It's all just carbohydrate. Especially, I think there's the big thing right now is you're getting your local beers, and those are actually almost higher than, you know, your Bud Lights and that kind of stuff. When they're being made locally, there's just a lot of carbohydrates in it, more than you would think. And I know it's very easy to get drink a beer and maybe take another one. And so that, yeah, that's a source of empty calories for sure.
Yeah, I think anyone who's used to, say, a light beer and then has an imperial stout will feel a little different after that. So if you're a member of the NPR Wine Club, let's move over Weekend Edition Cabernet and the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Merlot. Get ready for the Line One Club Soda coming soon to your mailbox. So let's let's discuss an email. Thank you, Grace. She says, I'm so glad to hear that you're putting healthy eating and enjoying food together. And of course, Grace is also a registered dietitian, and she's in private practice, and she specializes in disordered eating. She often sees patients who originally started to diet with good health intentions, but limited food selections and started to avoid, quote, bad foods and ended up malnourished or with disordered eating distress. So how would you advise the general public to assure that they're getting enough as they're trying to eat in a healthy fashion?
Well, hello, Grace. Thank you for sending that in. It's good to hear from a fellow registered dietitian. I think that people who we kind of call them chronic dieters, who diet a lot, and they do become a little bit preoccupied with just eating right, and they can start restricting a lot. And that can be a problem. And I think that we forget that nutrition is supposed to be more than just, like I said earlier, it's more than just what's in front of you, more than what's healthy. It's the whole aspect of it, the social aspect, the cultural aspect. There's so much more to it.
And just as a reminder, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. We're talking about eating for health and enjoyment today with registered dietitian Kaylee Hill. You're welcome to join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. You can also contact us by email at lineone, that's L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. And we'd love to hear your questions about what to eat, what not to eat, and in general, how to enjoy eating while eating for health. So we've talked about the keto diet. There's plenty of others out there. I hear about paleo. Maybe that's one that's a little more marketed to men. What is the paleo diet?
So the paleo diet is also called the diet that the caveman diet. It's a diet that includes nutrient-dense whole fresh foods and encourages participants to steer away from highly processed foods. The idea is that you're eating foods that you would have eaten as a caveman. So it's only stuff that you can kind of hunt and gather almost. I think that it doesn't exactly make sense in this time that we live in right now. And that it's really actually quite hard to, I mean, not in Alaska so much, but in most places, it's hard to be a hunter and a gatherer, to go out and find your food and to actually be at the basics. So I think it helps people kind of think about where their food is coming from, which is a really important thing. But overall, it's not the most sustainable diet.
Okay. And you mentioned that in Alaska, it may be a little easier to be a hunter-gatherer. The traditional Alaska Native diet has certainly a lot of advantages. Any thoughts on what people in Alaska have eaten for millennia?
Yes. So I'm pretty new to Alaska. I've been here about 9 months. So the Alaskan diet, I have learned a lot about in the past few months, and it's very, very interesting. It's almost like a keto diet where it's very high in fat and protein and not so much in carbohydrates, just because they're not available here in Alaska as much as other places. There's a lot to it, though, because what the natives are eating was a lot of raw foods, they ate everything, all the whole animals. They were having the liver, the brain, and they were getting a lot of nutrients from that. Things that we don't necessarily eat anymore. So it's not exactly comparable to the keto diet, but it has its similarities.
Okay. And certainly there's micronutrients that we normally think of as being more plant-derived that may be derived from animals, such as muktuk actually contains vitamin C, whereas we usually think of citrus fruits as being an important source of vitamin C. And I should add that if anyone's particularly interested in learning more about a traditional Alaska Native diet and also some of the great ways that that can be enjoyed in the 21st century, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium has a great deal of material that's available. And if you go to our website for Line One, Your Health Connection, you'll find links for that information there. So we have a caller from Fairbanks. Taryn, welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection.
Hi, thank you. This is a great show.
Thank you. It's the guest that makes it great. Do you have a question for Kaylee?
I do. So, you know, the new fad of the high protein ice creams, you know, all of them are in like pint size, like you can eat a whole pint. Is there really, you know, they obviously have high protein and they do taste good, but is there like a secret element that is not actually healthy for you, or are they really like the miracle ice creams?
Yes. So if you look in the back of those ice creams, you're going to see that there's a lot of ingredients you probably don't recognize. And there's a lot of added sugars to it. So you really have to look at that because, yeah, sugar alcohols, a lot of sugar alcohols in them.
So is that like xylitol or?
Yeah, things like xylitol, stevia, that kind of stuff. Which for me, that upsets my stomach. I know for a lot of people, it does upset your stomach and it's not the best thing to be taking in. So you just want to be careful because there are a lot of added ingredients to that you don't really know what they are.
So then does that mean that your body probably doesn't process them very well if they're just chemicals?
Yeah.
Well, I think, for instance, sorbitol, I'm actually remembering a patient I once saw who had weight loss and chronic diarrhea, and within the first day it became apparent that they had just recently, as they were trying to cut down on their their oral intake had started chewing sugarless gum pretty much continuously, and it was a sorbitol gum, and actually just stopping the gum made the diarrhea stop, because the sorbitol was an unabsorbed sugar and was actually causing the diarrhea. So yeah. We get into everything on this show. So Taryn, thank you for joining us on Line One, your health connection. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. We're coming up to a break, and we'll be back with you in about a minute.
One, Your Health Connection was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. This is Dr. Jay Butler, your host today. We're talking about eating for health and enjoyment with Kaylee Hill, registered dietitian. So our last caller had a question about high-protein ice creams. It seems like there's all kinds of fads in terms of low-carb or more fats. High-protein is something that comes up quite a bit also, particularly in pitches that are made to more athletic people. Certainly protein makes up our muscles. Is there such a thing as too much protein in our diets?
Yes. So there is a such thing as too much protein. Just like any other food, if you eat too much of it, you're also restricting other foods if you're eating more protein than carbohydrate or fat. But your liver can really only process so much protein. And I think you can maybe talk a little bit more on what happens when your body has more protein in it, what your body does with all of that, how it processes it. I'm not an expert on that, but.
Well, I think you're really highlighting how the physician and the dietitian mm-hmm. really need to work together because yes. there are disease states where a high protein diet really could be a disadvantage to health. We have an email question from Tolkitna that's a little more specific as it relates to our earlier question about beverages. When having a meal, is it bad to drink a lot of water?
I wouldn't say it's bad. It will make you feel full.
I guess it depends on what we mean by a lot.
But. Yeah, well, yes. Water can make you feel full for a little bit. So if you're eating it with your meal, you might not eat as much, which some people might find to be a good thing or a bad thing. But in general, water, I mean, it's good for you. So if all the drinks you're drinking, I think water is probably the best.
Right. It is possible to drink too much, but it's yes. usually associated with fairly severe mental illness as
yes.
well. Although I do notice there seems to be a fad. If I go to the gym, I sometimes see people walking around with gallon jugs of water. And I don't know, I've never seen anybody dead from dehydration at the gym, but I guess if it works for you, it's fine. I've never seen anybody drain the jug either.
Neither have I.
So we were talking a little earlier about the concept of protein and athletic performance. Jennifer has a question about diet while building muscles. Jennifer, welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, I've recently increased my physical activity and am preparing for the distance ski race season this spring. So I'm increasing muscle and hopefully cardiovascular strength, but I'm wondering how my diet should adapt for this kind of sudden increase in activity.
Sure. So I don't know your personal, what you're doing, who you are, your medical condition. So I definitely recommend talking to your doctor and asking, maybe referring to a registered dietitian that can look further into your case. But I think that in general, you want to make sure that the person that is giving you the advice really knows your situation and knows how much you're exercising every day and how much you're burning and all the different aspects that go into it.
Jennifer, yeah, are you planning to do the 50 kilometer?
I'm sorry?
Are you planning to do the 50 kilometer ski?
No, I'm probably just trying to do 25K races, but I might be doing 2 to 3 back-to-back, 1 week consecutively after each other in March. And I'm just generally asking, as a rule of thumb, if you're generally healthy and whatnot, when you're in that type of exercise regimen, should you be trying to increase your protein ratios? Is it more important to be eating fats, healthy fats, so that your body's learning to burn fats? You know, just that kind of thing, not any type of specific medical instruction.
Okay.
Sure. So like I said before, your body needs all three macronutrients, the carbohydrates, the proteins, and the fat. So even when you're exercising, you definitely want to get a wide variety of food. You don't want to be training your body to be working more with one carbohydrate than the other. Especially when you're training, you want to do what's comfortable, what you're used to. But if you're building muscle, a little bit of extra protein is a good thing. It can help you do that. Might be able to help your performance. But in general, you want to just stick to a diet that has a wide variety of everything in it.
All right. And that sounds like it's a sustainable diet as well.
Yes.
Variety is the spice of life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jennifer, good luck in your competition, and thank you for joining us on Line 1, Your Health Connection. Dale has a question that is a topic I wanted to get into. There's also a lot of popularity with intermittent fasting right now. At what point in terms of length does fasting adversely affect the body's metabolism?
Sure. So there are different kinds of fasting that I've heard of. There's fasting where you eat an unrestricted diet one day and then you fast the next day. There's ones where you do maybe 2 days of fasting in the week and then 5 days of unrestricted eating. And then there's also fasting where you skip a meal every day. The health benefits of that are still being studied, but right now they're finding that there's really no difference in weight loss or in how healthy your body is with fasting versus just a regular diet.
Okay. And as I recall, the metabolic pathways when we stop eating, and this can be for a short period of time, such as overnight, glucose is produced from the liver. There's a process, gluconeogenesis, where proteins are broken down from amino acids and generate glucose after all the glucose in the liver is depleted. And then we move into metabolism of fat and production of ketones, which we discussed earlier. How long does it take before we start getting to that point of actually metabolizing fat and breaking them down into ketones as an energy source?
Right. So that depends really on how large you are, but typically it'll take about 3 to 5 days.
Okay. So yeah. A very long period, at least
yes.
From my perspective. Okay. So there's a long history of diet fads also. What are some of the more bizarre diet fads over history?
There have been quite a few strange ones. One that really pops to my head right now is the cotton ball diet, where people would eat cotton balls when they were hungry. And theoretically, this would fill up your stomach and you would feel like you were full without having to eat a meal. Not good when that gets into your intestines and blocks you up and you end up in the hospital. You might feel a little silly on that diet. Another big one I remember reading about in the 20s, it was the cigarette diet, where when you were hungry, you'd just go out and smoke a cigarette instead of going and having a meal. And there was another diet made by, I think it was in like 1903, created by a man named Horace Fletcher, and it was the mastication diet. So he had you chewing, I think, your food 37 times, and you would either spit it out or swallow it at that point. And the idea was that you were going to eat slower and pay more attention to your food, but you had to chew it 37 times. It was very specific. And so, I mean, that's a little bizarre in my opinion.
I really wonder how 37 was chosen as the number of chews.
I also wondered that. I couldn't find anything that described that.
It's a prime number, so that's all I can think of. So the cotton ball diet is certainly interesting. One of the more entertaining surgeries I ever attended was intestinal obstruction, and we actually found a Nerf ball in the patient's duodenum. So certainly things that are undigestible should not be swallowed, and we don't really give medical advice on this show, but I think you can take that one to the bank.
Yes.
So you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. We're talking about health, eating for health and enjoyment. We have about 10 minutes left, so you're welcome to join the conversation. Let us know your thoughts, your questions. Toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also contact us by email at line1@alaskapublic.org. Or if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8433. So we touched a bit on disordered eating. I don't think we used the term orthorexia yet. That anorexia is not eating at all. Orthorexia, I think, is literally means righteous eating. So is that an issue? Other than being an irritant sometimes to people who do not adhere to the same diet, is orthorexia a real thing?
So, yes, it's one of the newer eating disorders that have popped up, and it is an obsession with the proper or the most healthful way of eating. And it's often accompanied with obsessive-compulsive disorder, but it's where you are really just fixated on eating healthy to the point where your quality of life kind of decreases, where you are so worried about going to that barbecue or that birthday dinner because you don't think there's going to be anything for you to eat there that's healthy enough. You've limited yourself to a very specific group of foods that you have deemed very healthful and good for you, and you refuse to go outside of that. So yeah, that can really impact your social life and your well-being. So definitely, there's a such thing as being too healthy, for sure.
Okay. I'd like to take a call. Elmer, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was asking about maintaining muscle mass as you age, but it also occurs to me to ask about maintaining prostate health. Males.
Okay.
Aging males, yeah.
Being a man of that age, I'm interested in this topic myself. Kaylee?
I think that's more a question for you.
Well, let's start with muscle mass, because certainly muscle mass is lost as we age. As I understand the literature, probably the more important part of maintaining muscle mass is maintaining physical activity. But are there, you know, I think this gets back to our question from a little earlier of, does just eating protein make me have more muscle?
Right. Okay. So no, just eating protein is not necessarily going to build your muscle. You do have to have that physical activity and the balanced diet with all of the nutrients. There's nutrients from all over that actually help build your muscles, build that all the amino acids and everything in your body. So it does. There's more to it than just eating protein.
Okay. And the question about prostate health, I'm not aware of any diet that's specifically helpful for maintaining prostate health. So I'm afraid I can't help you with that one either, Elmer. But thank you for joining us on Line 1, Your Health Connection. So a few years ago, there was, and I think this still continues today, a series of articles and even books called Eat This, Not That. So I think this raises questions. Are there foods that we should just not eat at all?
So I would never say absolutely no, don't eat that, because I think everything in moderation is fine, unless it's a cotton ball. Don't eat that. But I think that there are foods that people enjoy, and that if you have it every once in a while, that's totally fine. It's part of your life. It's part of your social life, your culture. I'm not going to discourage that. So I will never say no to something. I'll just say eat it in moderation.
Okay. Nora has a question. First of all, she says, thank you, Kaylee, for joining. This is an interesting show. She wonders if you have suggestions for good cookbooks or recipe blogs that focus on healthy eating.
There are a lot out there. When you're looking at blogs, I do recommend looking for ones written by registered dietitians. Some of them out there are written by nutritionists. There is a difference between a nutritionist and a registered dietitian. Nutritionists don't necessarily need to have any nutrition background. Anyone can call themselves that. So I do recommend looking for blogs written by registered dietitians. And there are a lot of good cookbooks out there. It really depends on your preference, how you like to eat. There is a lot out there, so it's hard to kind of sift through, but I would say look for anything written by a registered dietitian. That's a very safe bet.
Okay. We have a caller from Fairbanks. I don't know if this is a question that directly relates to diet, but Elizabeth, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
Hi, thank you. I am curious about gut bacteria and how chlorinated water affects that, since chlorine is used to decontaminate water. And I try to drink filtered water at home, but when I go out to eat and I drink the water, I'm assuming it's chlorinated, and I'm just wondering how that all works together.
Okay. Kaylee, any thoughts on that?
That is an interesting question. I have not specifically read up on any research on how chlorinated water can affect your gut biome. I think a lot more research will probably have to go into that for me to be able to answer that. But it definitely raises a very interesting question.
Yeah. And we've had earlier shows on the microbiome, and in those discussions, I'm not aware of any data on the amount of chlorine that's in water supplies affecting the microbiome, because the concentration is so very low. The bigger issue has been therapeutic use of antibiotics, which of course can be life-saving, but need to be used when they're really indicated, because using antibiotics when they're not indicated can influence the microbiome, that is the bacteria in the gut, in a way that is not healthful. So we're going to need to wrap up. We have about less than a minute left. Kaylee, how does a registered dietitian apply her knowledge to her own life? What's your favorite meal?
My favorite meal. That is a good question. The first thing that pops to mind is, so I'm from Rhode Island. I was born and raised there.
Quahogs would be part of it.
No.
Okay. Scratch
but
that.
My favorite meal is, and I remember this, we would go to the beach and we would have a little picnic set up, and I would always have curried chicken with celery, grapes, and arugula in a baguette. And then afterwards, we would go out and go to an ice cream place called Brickley's, and we would have a scoop of ice cream. So that's my favorite meal.
So you've heard it here on Line 1, Your Health Connection. Even registered dietitians enjoy a serving of ice cream from time to time. Kaylee, thank you for joining us today on Line 1. And thanks to all of you for joining us in the discussion. Next week, co-host Prentice Pemberton will be back for a discussion on nonviolent communication with Carl Stayart of the Center for Nonviolent Communications. Zakia McCummins produced today's program. Chris Bidelek was our sound engineer, and Ammon Swenson edited our web content. This is Dr. Jay Butler wishing you a healthful life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.